Dan Moore.
Here.
Yvette Etu.
Almost here.
Here.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Pledge of allegiance. Pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I thought it, Bruce, my colleague Bruce Rinker suggested that because these meetings are so important, because they only last about 3 hours, that it would be nice to postpone the swearing in of the officers until the end of the meeting.
Yeah, we thought you'd enjoy a full meeting.
But actually, Yvette and I decided that was not a good idea. So is that okay, Bruce?
Yeah.
So we'll have this swearing in of the officers. We'll start right now.
They're not going to listen to your financial report first, Wade, so just hang on. What we'll do is we're going to swear in the first three officers as a group. So Devin, Matthew, and Jorge, if you could please come forward, and then we'll do the promotion together.
Very good. I state your name.
I, Mark Aguilera.
Swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution and laws of the state of Ohio.
Constitution and laws of the state of Ohio.
And the rules and regulations of Cleveland Metro Parks.
And the rules and regulations of Cleveland Metro Parks.
And I will discharge the duties to the best of my ability.
And I will discharge the duties to the best of my ability.
Of the office and state your position.
Of the office of police officer.
To which I've been appointed.
To which I've been appointed.
I will faithfully carry out and implement.
Faithfully carry out and implement.
The policies enunciated.
Policies enunciated.
And the instructions given to me by the board of, by the board of park commissioners.
And the instructions given to me by the board of park commissioners.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
The Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
This I promise to do as I shall answer under God.
This I promise to do as I shall answer unto God.
Congratulations.
Chief, would you like to introduce your three new police officers?
Absolutely. Good morning, everybody. Boy, what a great day. Thank you to my brothers and sisters of our great organization for coming and supporting our new officers. Matt Malone comes to us, recent graduate from the Polaris Police Academy. And Matt was a specialist out in Columbia High School, comes from Columbia Township. Devin Hall comes to us from the Ohio Investigative Unit, spent 6 years there. And this face right here, kind of interesting story, Jorge Villarella, left us 40 days ago to another agency. But we are so damn good here that he came back. So, I mean, I'm really stoked about this because this just says what this agency is all about. For someone to leave to go to somewhere else and then to come back home, that speaks volumes of what we do, how we do it, and what we stand for. So welcome home, Jorge. Thank you.
Would you like to introduce your two promotions, please?
Absolutely. Thank you, Brian. Officer Larry Reich. Larry has a long career, starting with the Ohio Division of Watercraft. Before that, United States Marines. From there, he went to Cleveland Heights. Thank you for the support from his sergeant from Cleveland Heights Police Department there and standing behind him. And the Larry is being promoted to sergeant today. Also standing in the room, Deputy Chief Scott Rotolo. I want to recognize him from the city of Worcester. Larry and Scott actually started and went to the police academy. So career coming together again. That's fantastic. Stephen Howard, sergeant, being promoted to lieutenant. Steve has a long career here. I don't want to go on and on, but he's a fantastic officer. Both of these men are fantastic. And we are excited to have Sergeant Larry Reich and Lieutenant Stephen Howard getting promoted today. Congratulations, gentlemen.
Let's make it official now.
I, state your name.
I, Stephen Howard.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution.
That I will support the Constitution.
And the laws of the United States of America.
And the laws of the United States of America.
The Constitution and the laws of the state of Ohio.
Constitution and the laws of the state of Ohio.
And the rules and regulations of the Cleveland Metro Park.
And the rules and regulations of Cleveland Metro Parks.
And I will discharge the duties to the best of my ability.
I will discharge the duties to the best of my ability.
Of the office of, and state your position.
Of the office of Lieutenant Sergeant.
Very good. To which I've been appointed.
To which I've been appointed.
I will faithfully carry out and implement.
I will faithfully carry out and implement.
The policies enunciated.
Policies enunciated.
And instructions given to me by the Board of Park Commissioners.
And the instructions given to me by the Board of Park Commissioners.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
And this I promise to do as I shall answer under God.
This I promise to do as I shall answer under God.
Very good. Congratulations. Well, we can probably, unless any people want to wait for the 3 hours, it's probably.
It's a good time, yeah.
Probably a good time to leave, but you're welcome to stay at 3 hours if you would like to.
If all the family members and officers could all meet outside for some photos, I'd appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Yeah, showed up.
I think we're ready for.
All right, let's go backwards. And yeah. Let's make sure that we do the approval of the minutes of the previous meeting.
Yes. We have a motion.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Financial report, Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Well, we're queuing that up, commissioners. Today's report will be brief. At a high level, we're right on spot on where we thought we would be budget wise, and we're doing well so far. I do want to hit a couple highlights quickly. First, see if I can get my pointer going here. There it is. You'll see that we're up on charges for services about $3 million year to date. The two big contributors, about $840,000 of that relate to the zoo, and about $1.1 million relates to golf. So that's two of the $3 million roughly. We'll go through that in a little bit more detail. You can see year to date, we're $1.1 million ahead of where we were last year, 6 months in, which is about a 4% lift. So we're doing really well. As we go to the detail, I had mentioned with the zoo, where's this? There it is. Okay, sorry about that. That's the $840,000 year-to-date revenue that we're up. I did want to point this out. That might catch your attention. That is only due to timing. We received our commission check this year in June. Last year in 23, we received it in July. So next month, when you see the financial statements, it'll look about the opposite. But we've already looked at the number, and we're running consistent. So we're doing really well at the zoo. You can look at the net number. We're about spot on with where we were last year. So no concerns. They're doing a really good job. We're happy with the financial results. Golf, you can see it at the top. Greens fees is up 14%. But when you factor out Ironwood, rounds played are up 10.5%. So that extra 3 to 4% in greens fee revenue is Ironwood. And we'll see that in detail. Ironwood is already turning a profit and doing really well. We're about $1 million, actually $1.1 million up year to date in total revenues, which is 20%. You go, wow, 20%, what drives that? And if you look right here, food service just doing extremely well. The changes made are really driving things right there. And then right below that, merch sales, even though it's a lower number, merch sales this year are up 32.9%, almost 33%. So we're selling merchandise, we have the right merchandise, and the food service at the golf courses is going extremely well. You can see the net is up $333,000 through the first 6 months on golf. So that's right where we'd hoped it'd be, actually better than we'd hoped it'd be. Nothing to really point out. All of the golf courses are doing better than the previous year, except for a couple that had some close down time. So it's understandable that they would be a little bit behind, but not much. And I did mention Ironwood. You can see right there, already dropping $136,000 in net revenue through 6 months. Compliments to the golf team. Let's jump to enterprise quickly. And you can see that as an operating unit, they're $115,000 above where they were last year through 6 months. Concessions is up, actually, everything's up. Concessions up through 6 months, 9.6%. Dock rentals up 9.5%. And other revenues up 8.7%. And that's commendable, as we've talked about at previous meetings, because we've lost some tenants in parking. We've closed some docks because of where the barge is parked. But all in all, the enterprise operation is right where we'd hoped it'd be. There's not much to comment on this first page. Merwin's Wharf, which we talk about every month because it's our largest operation, is above where it was last year through 6 months. Everything's doing well. Wildwood, I do point this out only because you might notice that. We just can't, because the barge is parked there now, it impacts their revenue. But it's not a concern from where I sit as your CFO. Everything is where we would want it to be. When you go to the last page, we've talked about parking is lagging a little bit because we lost the tenant E&Y there. But all in all, enterprise is doing well. Again, no concerns. I don't want to give you a full sense of security, but I want to raise things that could be a concern to you as commissioners, and there's really nothing there to raise. The nature shops, right now, revenues are up $51,000 through 6 months. You might notice this operating number is up slightly. That's just because we bought more merch this year. We had a thing called the Eclipse that we bought merch for, and we've bought merch that's being sold now. So you're going to see that merch that's in this number hit that top line in the next few months. So that is going extremely well too at the nature shops. The only other thing, that's the last slide I had, commissioners. I would point out that we did hear from the Cuyahoga County Fiscal Officer about property values. And many of you may have heard this. Property values in the county right now are estimated to go up 24.4%. That's great for Cuyahoga County as you look at that. But the funny thing is they have a line that's estimated increase in revenues, and ours is zero because we don't get the benefit of that lift in increase in valuation. But we do get the lift of new construction. And once they determine what is new and what is just an increase in someone's home, many of us got letters, people in the audience, I know I got mine at home, values are going up. But that speaks volumes to the strength of the county's economy, and the prices of homes are going up. So that's a solid testament to the entire county. But it went from the county's valuation was $101 billion. Now it's almost $126 billion in property value in Cuyahoga County, based upon the most recent revaluation. Other than that, I don't have anything to share this morning, commissioners, unless there are questions.
I just want to tag on to Wade's financial report and thank all of the staff. It's been an interesting going through, you know, the COVID year and then years, and then seeing how the staff is performing, across all sectors, customer service, guest focus, all of our seasonals, all of our interns. We're very appreciative of those who come to work and serve the public. So we've been very blessed with, you know, solid numbers, and, you know, we look forward to a very good second half. Now we'll work on the cleanup. So we'll go into new business. The very first action item was the swearing of the police officers. We did do that. The recommended action falls on page 9 to appoint Devin Hall, Matthew Malone, and Jorge Valerio as full-time police officers.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next was the swearing in of the sergeant. We did swear in Officer Lawrence Reek to a full-time position as sergeant. It falls on the bottom portion of page 9.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And the last one was the swearing in of Lieutenant Stephen Howard. His recommended action to appoint him to the full-time police lieutenant falls on the top portion of page 10.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next, we have three retiring guests, one of which is here with us this morning. But the very first, we had Joseph Garrow, 10 years of service for us at Big Met Golf Turf. He spent his entire career there, and he did a consistent and prideful job at Big Met Golf Course, which is one of our busiest facilities, and we're very appreciative of his tenure with Cleveland Metro Parks. Also, I'd like to recognize Teresa Moore for more than 35 years. She is the true example of how people worked an entire career with the Cleveland Metro Parks. She played an extremely significant role with the zoo and revenue expenses, with an increase of $10 million of growth during the 10-year span. Zipline 4D Theater, Asian Lantern Festival, Wild Wonder Lights. She was a true professional for Cleveland Metro Parks. She was our admissions manager, so I'd like to recognize her 35 years of service to Cleveland Metro Parks and thank her for that. The one gentleman that we do have here with us this morning has more than 41 years. Again, a career with Cleveland Metro Parks, and that's James E. Camps.
Jim's a hugger. He always gets hugged when he gives a side hug presentation. When I first started, none of the director positions were filled except for one. So we went through a hiring process, and Jim was one of the first people I hired.
A grueling process.
Very grueling. Yes. And Jim, throughout his tenure working under me and working for the park system, you know, was like a father figure to me. He was really helpful in welcoming me to Cleveland and welcoming me to the Cleveland Metro Parks. And I think he was a father figure to the Cleveland Metro Parks as a whole, to all of the staff. Jim was one of the people I could count on to tell me what was really going on, because the staff were very comfortable talking to him, were very comfortable sharing their true feelings about what was going on throughout the park system. And that was something I really, really appreciated, and I'm definitely gonna miss. So it's bittersweet, Jim. I'm very proud of you. He always said, yes, if you want me to go, boss, just tell me. I'm like, I do not want you to go. As long as you want. Everyone needs to retire at the right time, Jim. You know, whenever you want to go. Like, I do not want you to go. But it seems like he went at the right time, and he's enjoying his retirement so far. So Jim Camps.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I brought some tag-alongs for Joe, but this, if I may.
You like cookies?
Yeah.
Cookies?
Yeah. Whoa. 41 years of keys. No, and then, on a more serious note, there are two things that I'm very proud of in the Cleveland Metro Parks as an employee. Being Brian and Joe, thank you so much for letting me be part of the staff to start the lakefront up and to get Winnie Park Bridge done and connect the lakefront to the city of Cleveland. And the second thing I'm proud of is that everybody knows our boss, Joseph Rozak, is very good with electronic equipment, but he has stooped so low as to psycho text and psycho call. And I think I'm the only employee that you've ever asked to please stop texting me. So.
You are the only one.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it's been great working with everybody. Thank you for coming to see me today. And I really appreciate all the time I've had with you. Thank you.
He knows. On behalf of Anthony J. Russo, the Board of Park Commissioners, we'd like to recognize you for your 41 years of dedicated service to Cleveland Metro Parks, a true park professional recognized by the entire state and all of the guests you've served. It's hard to read through your entire list of accomplishments, but you have been a true professional for Cleveland Metro Parks. Time, treasure, and talents will never be forgotten.
Thank you so much, bro.
The recommended action recognizing our retirees falls on the bottom portion of page 11 for their years of service to Cleveland Metro Parks.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
The next is budget adjustment number 7. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 12, you'll see budget adjustment number 7 in the amount of $5,909,529. I do want to lift up one item because it is large. $5.7 million is for capital construction expense. Of that, almost $5.2 million is for the Solon to Chagrin Falls project at the South Chagrin Reservation, and those costs are being covered by a reimbursement from the city of Solon. So $5.2 million out of the $5.9 is being reimbursed. But I would ask your approval of budget adjustment number 7.
Move to approve.
Second.
On favor?
Aye.
The next action item is the amendment number 2 to guaranteed maximum price $1,748, construction manager at risk. This is the zoo-wide project. This is the overarching. This is repair to the giraffe barn. This is a new roof. We have worked very hard diligently at looking at the insulation to install an insulated metal roof panel system, fairly similar to one that we're doing at Garfield Park. Turns out we need to be very mindful of the animals and the process, and Turner has been doing a great job with that. We are bringing forward the guaranteed maximum price contract number 2 for Turner to redo the giraffe barn. We will be having our AZA inspection here shortly, and so we want to make sure that we're up to speed. Recommended action falls on the mid portion of page 14 to authorize the GMP number 2 at Turner.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the amendment number 5, GMP number 4. This will be, there's going to be many of these over time, over the next number of years. Contract 1543, this is construction managers. This is the Gorilla Primate Forest. As part of the redo of the rainforest, we have also realized that how our entrance sits is really, it really bifurcates the entire zoo. So our teams have worked diligently at bringing around concepts and process to remove and culvert modifications to actually bring the road around the back side of it, to actually take traffic away from and do a more unified zoo. We're working with a tremendous amount of partners along the way. This is an extremely complex project. Electric generator switches, we're working with the sewer district. This is a very, very big deal. So this is a $9 million GMP number 4 for the Albert M. Higley Company to continue the project and work at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 16.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We continue on with that. Amendment number 6, contract 1541, professional services agreement, Gorilla Primate Forest Edition. We continue on with Van Aken Auken, now doing business as DVA. We have worked diligently to continue to forward all of the architectural construction administration, all of the different services, mechanical, structural, civil, and we continue to scope out how we're going to continue to build out the new primate forest. The recommended action falls for the new scope of total services, the amount of $9,477,283 in the mid portion of page 18.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the amendment number 1, contract 1716, professional services agreement, rainforest pump station rehabilitation. Again, we continue to maintain all of our services across the entire 25,000 acres. CTI, the engineer, we've worked with them for permit drawings and construction phases in the amount of $95,200 to continue the process of working on our pumps. Recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 19 to enter into the contract.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the approval of the LPA. This is with ODOT. This is on the Garfield Parkway Bridge replacement and closing Mill Creek. This has been a very unique process to work on the municipal bridge funding program, Garfield Park Bridge structure, closing the Mill Creek and the Garfield Reservation, where we're doing a significant amount of work, almost $10 million worth of total work, creating access to the Red Arrow picnic area on the upper portion of it. Cleveland Metro Parks has worked diligently to provide access and opportunities to continue to improve the overall condition, a very poor condition of the bridge structure. The recommended action falls to enter into the LPA agreement with ODOT for the Garfield Parkway Bridge replacement with ODOT, contributing 95% of all eligible costs, which is wonderful, falls on the bottom portion of page 20.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the acquisition of 8700 Chippewa LLC property. This is in the Brecksville Reservation. I'm not sure if David will have a chance to bring up the map. It is significant to the park, as it is off of 82. There was a sole member of the LLC who has agreed to sell the property in fee simple. This has been a longstanding opportunity to look at buying this property and closing out that section as not necessarily an infill, but necessary, a neighbor that has boundaries to the Park District. So we were very blessed that the real estate team moved very fast. We also have to thank all of our park managers across the entire 25,000 acres, because they are, a lot of times, our eyes and ears on properties that are going up for sale, as you'll see for the next one that we'll ask for an approval on. But we're very happy to close out this particular purchase here. The recommended action, if there are no questions, falls on the top mid portion of page 21 to purchase 8700 Chippewa LLC.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Get distracted by Wade. We're good?
I think so.
Very good. The next is the ratification of land acquisition, West Creek Conservancy. This is a partnership. This is a unique opportunity that Cleveland Metro Parks reached out. We had been talking about this particular property since 2021, located on Aurora Road in the city of Solon. You can see this particular, I would say, very unique property. The asking price for the three parcels and two brick homes a number of years ago was $1.8 million. You can see that the purchase price now is $550,000. The unique opportunity that we will be looking at and why we partnered with West Creek is to potentially do a lot split and take the house off on the what I call the northern portion adjacent to Aurora Road, but then preserve all of the backland that is adjacent to on basically three sides of the park district, right near the Hawthorne Park addition. From the land there, you can see right into the park very easily. This has been something that we have been looking at, again, probably even longer than 2021 when the first contact was made. We were very blessed to be able to purchase it at auction and add it to the reservation in the amount of 6.78 acres. So this is a ratification for a fee simple title for 6.7 acres in partnership with West Creek Conservancy. Recommended actions is in the bottom portion of page 22.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We will move over into the tabulation of award and bids. We have three of them. 6810 Beer Wine Spirits for resale, asphalt pavement, Bedford Reservation, which is our pavement plan. 2024-6860 pavement markings, and then we continue to bolster the fleet. And this is a new 2025 Freightliner M2. And this is for the forestry bucket truck with a chip box inside of it. Recommended action for all of those fall on the top portion of page 23.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We move into approval of vouchers and payroll. Wade?
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 33, you'll see resolution 24-07-083 in the amount of $15,594,153.77 for the vouchers that were paid. All the vouchers have been reviewed as to their legality and they conform with their Ohio revised code. I would just ask your approval of that resolution.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Public comment.
Yes, public comment, Mike.
By the empty room suddenly. Many times I've inquired about significant capital expenses we've been shown on the monthly financials. Various reasons have been supplied. They're shown under enterprise admin as opposed to venue, shown in different year or when authorized, or recently because they're only listed at the end of year in the GAAP format when that's prepared for the state. However, you continue to assert that these venues are making money without acknowledging the major expenses that they incur. Those expenses are never shown to the public. This is more than misleading. Prove that those pricey items are justified by showing that profits more than cover their cost. After all, you don't have to worry about taxes. If they don't do more than pay their way, then they better have a solid justification like safety, not that they can just lift bigger boats. The budget book seems to cover where major capex were shown until you drill down. Capital equipment does not even list what equipment was purchased. Just lots of pretty pie charts and lots of colors. Eye-catching, but bypasses the actual info needed. We spent that much on this item and charged it there. Since so many costs like promotion and tech and media and police are not even broken out, this would be a small step. On the other hand, it was good to learn that the license plate readers at Edgewater helped track down some of the shooters. Might that not indicate that cameras could indeed be used elsewhere? In spite of today's hires, I doubt if we have all the police we really need. And anything that will deter bad behavior, facilitate response, and resolve crimes more quickly would be welcomed by all. It was certainly a bad look when Metro Parks withheld information and videos on the shooting at Edgewater. That only reinforces what the local papers have said about Metro Parks refusing to provide police blotter info like the cities do. Whether it is financial or crime reporting, just trust us is no longer adequate. Thank you.
Yeah, just to correct the record, I mean, we did not withhold the records. We were providing the accurate records as they were prepared. With the increased volume of requests for body cams and surveillance footage, the required analysis and redactions that have to happen, we are just not staffed up to do right now. And we are currently studying it. We had internal meetings. Brian has authorized us to shore up personnel that would be needed to do that. But there is a grave disservice to the public if we release information that is not accurate, particularly about crimes. If the record will reflect that there were a number of information statements that we did release to the media early on that the incident did occur. But as we received and studied and got that more accurate picture of what actually occurred at the Edgewater incident, we released it according to our timeliness requirements under Ohio law.
Well, my understanding is while we have to be sensitive to public perception, the fact is we have to follow these protocols. And my understanding also is that we immediately were coordinating with other area law enforcement agencies so that the public safety was first and foremost in following these protocols.
And from the time the plane dealer made the request, we made a response within 3 minutes. So their reporting necessarily wasn't exactly tied into exactly how it is. I believe there are areas that we need to shore up, continually shore up and look at, and we are looking at those. City of Cleveland has a department of 12 people that do body camera redactions. We don't have any. And so to this point, it was adequate. Now it is not. And so now we'll be making those adjustments and changes and make sure we're responsive. We've got our public information team that is always queued up, and we've got an immediate response action until we actually get the accurate information. We are not going to release inaccurate information, especially when it relates to juveniles.
Thanks. Is there an additional public comment?
Very good. We will move into the very first information briefing item. It is the 2023 STREAM Students After School Initiative. Bethany, welcome. Bethany is our Watershed Stewardship Center Manager at West Creek. Welcome.
Well, good morning, everyone. And commissioners, thank you so much for having me out today to speak with you about this really exciting initiative that has occurred past year coming out of our Outdoor Experiences Division. My name is Bethany Jespe. I am the center manager over at Watershed Stewardship Center, and I'm very excited to share a recap of our STREAM Students program with you. We do a fantastic job in outdoor experiences of serving our local youth through school programming. And if we drill down to look at Watershed Stewardship Center, in 2023, we served 12,000 students through educational programming. About a quarter of those were from CMSD, Cleveland Metropolitan School District, directly, and an additional 50% were served through at our inner ring suburbs. So we're doing a really good job of meeting the Cleveland community and its surrounding communities. However, we're always looking for continuous improvement. That's what we do in Cleveland Metro Parks. So as we consider how to better and further serve youth in our community, we started thinking about what are the barriers, what are the challenges we're facing so that we know how to approach them and find a solution. So we know that transportation can be difficult for schools, despite our outstanding bus, you know, scholarship program. There's still schools that have a hard time getting out to us just because of sheer costs of busing. We know that as schedules change for middle and high school students, it's harder for schools to accommodate those enrichment activities of a field trip. And we know that in the community as a whole, it's really important to have safe and engaging after school program opportunities for students. There are so many studies showing tremendous outcomes that come from strong curriculum-based after-school opportunities that help students get to that next level of, you know, professional adulthood as they leave the school system. Lastly, we really know that if we want students to love science, we have to get them out and have them doing it in the field and seeing how cool it really is. So after considering these challenges, we started dreaming of what a model could be that could address them. And STREAM Students was born out of this. So we had the idea that if we could just get them to our center after school, we can pilot this amazing program that brings 18 Cleveland Metropolitan School District students from Orchard STEM School on the west side, just north of us in Clark Fulton. And they came out to West Creek Reservation twice a year. And while they were with us, what if we got them really hands-on engaged with these STEM, or as we extended it, STREAM topics, so science, technology, research, engineering, art, and math? And what if they applied those skills then to an actual restoration project within Cleveland Metro Parks? We also knew that we would need to give them food. Middle and high school students are hungry after school. So we thought about all of these different details we would need to have in place to have a successful program. So we needed money. We applied and we received a federal grant. I'm really pleased that we were able to get a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA grant, that supported this program through its first pilot year and then into the next year coming as well. Also, we were able to partner with Jen Greiser and her fantastic natural resources team, as well as West Creek Conservancy and Open Doors Academy, who acted as our partner in transporting the students and getting a cohesive group together and to us twice a month. The program was staffed by two of our Cleveland Metro Parks naturalists, Matt Knittle and Peter Frank. The whole goal of the program was to have a project-based learning opportunity. So we looked at these, you know, yet to be acquired by Cleveland Metro Parks properties of the Parmadale, Camp Corday, and Padua areas. And we thought, well, there's a lot of work that needs to happen here. Jen and her team are formulating a plan. How can we fit in so that we can help to mitigate the stormwater runoff and erosion effects that are happening on these properties along roughly 2,000 linear feet of stream bank and wetland habitat. As we formulated our approach to the restoration project, we also knew we wanted to get students directly engaged and interacting with science professionals. And luckily we have so many great professionals right at our disposal, especially at the Watershed Stewardship Center. So in their time with us, the students were able to interact with naturalists, with our natural resources area manager, who's pictured here with one of the students, that's Valerie Carter Stone. They interacted with a stream restoration ecologist. They got exposure to the NOWCOR program, Northern Ohio Watershed. It's a part of the AmeriCorps program, but even just as that second step maybe between college and a professional career, showing that scaffolding that's possible in the region. And then even our GIS manager was able to come out and fly the drone above the project restoration site and tie in that it's not just, you know, science in the field. There are so many levels of professionals that support the work in Cleveland Metro Parks. And there are so many opportunities for youth in the region to look to as they hopefully will grow and work with us. So we started with research and planning. This was a 9-month program. So there were plenty of months where it was too cold to be outside and we needed to do our work indoors. It's dark out. So the students started by researching how streams flow. What is hydrology? How is topography affecting how water flows? What are interventions we can make to help the environment and create resilient stream riparian systems? So this is our stream table here that the students are interacting with. They're able to actually mold stream beds, and we can put in, you know, barriers and kind of show how water will divert based on what the landform is like, and then approach that through mitigation efforts. We also did seed sorting. The students incorporated that art aspect of stream by drawing out the project. There was math done. How many live willow stakes will it take to support this stream bank? How do we calculate that? So all of these science topics and math topics and engineering, all of it was tied in and done throughout kind of those colder months before the restoration project could take place. Then when it was warm enough, we got to go out and do this hands-on science. And this was done again with support from the natural resources staff. They were just fantastic through this entire process. And we got to get these kiddos out and doing this work that they had researched and planned for. And now we're able to do it in the field and kind of connect that more traditional classroom learning with the activities out in nature. Perseverance and teamwork were very important. But along the way, you know, despite the challenges of weather, and sometimes transportation was tough for them, and sometimes they were tired after school, these students had to become resilient, learn to work as a team, and they had to learn how to do the hard things. It wasn't just science on paper. It was pounding these stakes into the ground and stringing up the fencing. And they had fun doing it, and they learned so much through doing it. And I think that they were proud of their work. And I think some of the intangible effects of this restoration project was the sense of ownership and belonging that the students felt with us in Cleveland Metro Parks. And that was a really powerful thing to experience. So here's some of the students with Peter Frank there as they're working in this newly constructed wetland habitat, checking out some of the wetland plants that had been planted there as a buffer. And in our first year results, we did see success. You know, the goal was to plant along that 1700 linear feet of stream and wetland habitat, and mission accomplished. There were several of these planting pods put in place, so fenced off to protect them from deer and other wildlife as they established and began to grow. Lots and lots of live willow stakes were planted. And this is an early spring photo of this site. If you went out there now, it's actually covered in green growth, and all of those plantings are doing really, really well. Here are some of the students walking through the project site and connecting their work and their time with us through the greater Cleveland community. It's really impactful and a really special project. We are so excited to have the chance to do this again. As we look ahead, we're going to continue our work with Natural Resources, Open Doors Academy, and West Creek Conservancy. We're also exploring an additional collaboration, bringing students in from the Rhodes College and Career Academy, because we do feel like we have the capacity and bandwidth to incorporate more students into this program. And we're going to continue monitoring the existing project that was shared and look to create new project learning opportunities within the West Creek Reservation. So thank you so much for the opportunity to share this program. And I'm wondering if you have any questions.
Well, you answered one of them, and that's expanding the program. Question I have, though, is there any follow-up with the students so they can see the fruits of their labors, how they've succeeded, and where not, I mean, any opportunity to expand it that way as well?
Yes. So following the formal program during their school year, we did host a pizza party and we invited students out along with their parents or caregivers to come out and tour the restoration site. We wanted students to have the opportunity to show off to the adults in their lives what they had been working so hard for and where they were after school for so many months.
But I think even beyond that, is there an opportunity 1, 2, 3 years out for at least some kind of like a checklist where they can come back? Is that feasible?
It's possible. Yeah. I think part of it is that, you know, where do they go? Are they, you know, some of them are, you know, still in school, you know, where are they actually going to progress into? So I think, you know, part of it is that you see this group here, catch them while they're young, and hopefully they stay with us over a period of time, which would be wonderful. Hopefully they become part of conservation corps and have that ethos. One of the things just to highlight, you know, with Bethany's work and Jen Greiser and Mary Rouse, this was an old soccer field. So this was an actual Padua High School actually put in an impoundment, which then created flooding downstream. And so they actually excavated the entire site. It looked more like Moon Crater for a period of time. And they've worked very, very hard at trying to reforest it. Despite some of their best efforts, we have deer and some of the other challenges, but and some soils, but they're doing an amazing job and they're actually seeing hands-on conservation and science. So it's a wonderful program.
Yeah, it's impressive.
I had a couple of questions. How many kids specifically were in the STREAM program? Was that 19 kids?
It was 18.
18, okay. Mm-hmm. And then how was transportation provided?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I forgot to mention. So Open Doors Academy was the partner who helped to coordinate that. So they are a nonprofit that operates within Cleveland, and they work to provide out-of-school opportunities for students. But they don't have access, you know, to the bounty of Cleveland Metro Parks. So through working together, we were able to utilize their existing connections with the schools and then their third-party transportation system. And the NOAA grant that we received helped to fund that busing. So the students would meet after school at Orchard STEM. They would have the ODA coordinators and counselors with them to act as their adult chaperones after school. And then they came on that busing that they arranged to our location.
And was that a school bus contract or something like that?
A private company, actually.
Private company, mm-hmm. Okay. And then the other rather substantial number of kids that are enjoying nature programs.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something like 10,000?
12,000 students.
12,000. Mm-hmm. And a quarter of them were CMSD, right?
Correct.
And how is their transportation supported?
It is on a school-to-school basis. So Cleveland Metropolitan School District does have an overarching busing and fleet operation, and the individual schools will work to coordinate that on their end when they call to schedule with us. We'll book them a program, and then it's really on the teachers or the school administration to negotiate the transportation from there through their fleet.
So it's part of the individual school, the individual school's budget that they hire the CMSD buses. And
correct. And then we're able to support busing for students through a voucher system. So after students come to us for their educational program, they will submit their form that they came and saw us, and then we will reimburse them up to $150 per bus. And then we calculate that based on the actual mileage. It's often less than $150 per bus.
So the constraint here is it transportation, or is it our own ability to staff these functions?
I really think it is more on the school's end. I know that there has been a real dire shortage of drivers of buses. So even for normal school routes in the mornings and after school, I think that has been a challenge for schools. I do think that budgets overall can be challenging. Sometimes it's just the number of buses an individual school system might own. And if they're required for other needs during the day, or if they can't come to a trip because, you know, this preschool ends in the middle of the day, so the bus can't be at a nature center, it has to be at the school for that midday transportation. I think there's a lot of nuance that varies from district to district. But I'm proud that we have this program, the voucher program, to help support that and bring the students out.
This whole program, I think, is absolutely fabulous. And it can be completely mind-changing and career-changing. And it's so important to be able to do this.
I think to add on, early on, some will remember, we owned two school buses, and the limiting factor was is that you can only make multiple trips a day. And so when we looked at having to certify them and do all the maintenance and everything else, we're just like, let's sell the buses off and actually do the voucher program where we can impact more kids in more areas. Because of the 25,000 acres and the multiple nature centers and certainly our zoo, it's one of those very unique opportunities. So the voucher program has been supported by the Emerald Necklace Endowment Fund over a period of time. Teachers have been supporting it. It's a wonderful way, but it, you know, it takes a village. It takes a village to run all of these programs, but anytime you can make an impact, it's truly remarkable. So we thank Bethany and her entire team for all of their hard work.
Yeah, excellent.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Next up, we have the Zoo Science Program Update 2024. Dr. Kuhar is going to introduce our two guests, and you will be very impressed with the amount of work that they have been able to accomplish. Dr. Kuhar?
Good morning, commissioners. We want to give you an update on the science program that our team's been doing, some amazing work and some amazing results, but we thought you should actually hear it from the people who are actually doing the work as opposed to me. So I wanted to introduce our two research curators, Dr. Diana Kester and Dr. Noah Dunham. They are the real brute force around getting this work done and coordinating all the different projects throughout the zoo. So I will turn it over to them.
Thank you, Chris. And thank you everybody for the opportunity to come here and just give you this update today. We really appreciate it. Noah and I are actually going to talk to you this morning really briefly about three of our sort of major ongoing, like longer term, bigger picture research projects that we've been focused on for the last several years, at least. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about our sort of the teaching and training that we spend a great deal of time doing and that we're really proud of. To start off, it's my great pleasure to introduce tree kangaroos to you if you've never seen them before. We actually have at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. I'm very happy to say that I'm proud of the fact that we are the main endocrine hormone hub for all of the Matthews tree kangaroos in AZA zoos. And through doing that and establishing that work, having the opportunity to support zoos in this way, we found out through looking at the reproductive hormones in the population that so they were having a lot of trouble breeding, most likely related to the fact that many of them in the population were overweight. So on this body condition score chart at the bottom on the right side, they were existing on the right side here. And we initiated a major research project focusing on evaluating the diet and how to improve the diet in zoos that hold these animals. And what we found out was that through a number of really interesting projects that haven't really been, the methods have not been really applied to zoo animals before in the past, we found out vital information that allowed us to work with other of the main leading people controlling this population in AZA zoos, and we overhauled the entire set of diet recommendations for all zoos feeding this species. So those were distributed, and we continue to work with this species in sort of supporting the zoos as they transition over to this diet. It's really hard to change things that have been done for a long time a different way. But we also now are adding additional information about this species, not a whole lot is known about it, by working with our some of our partners in the field in the Tree Kangaroo Conservation Program that's based in Papua New Guinea. We work with them to find out more information about these animals in the wild to apply back to their care and taking the best care of them in zoos. And we're now using this research approach that we've taken for Matthews tree kangaroos, and we're applying it to a number of other species in zoos. It was, I think, really successful in terms of supporting species sustainability for this population. So we're looking at other species with similar problems and applying these same methodologies to help address issues and improve their reproductive success. I'm going to turn it over to Noah to talk about our next couple projects.
All right, thank you. And just to reiterate what Diana said, thanks so much to the commissioners and Brian and Chris for the opportunity to speak with you today. I wanted to highlight one project that I'm involved with, along with my graduate student advisee, Mara Plosek, who's pictured here. So if you're not familiar, colobus monkeys are there's a variety of species that are found throughout equatorial Africa, and then also Langer species, the two on the right side, as you're looking at the screen, are found throughout Southeast Asia. So we have a study that I think represents a lot of our research projects, kind of a multidisciplinary approach to understanding animal health, behavior, physiology. So the overall goals of this large, now multi-institutional study is to review mortality records. So we know over the last 20 years across different AZA facilities, a number of these individuals have died. We're trying to identify common causes of death, diseases, and trying to then relate that to aspects of husbandry, especially diet, to see if we can identify trends and then help sort of alleviate some of the primary health concerns that these species may have. So yeah, I think our department is really unique in that we have a broad range of expertise that can do these kinds of things. So we're working closely with Dr. Pam Dennis, who's a veterinarian and an epidemiologist, who's really helping us with this mortality review assessment. The second part of the study is really to survey all of the AZA facilities that house any one of these species and figuring out what the diet is composed of. So what food items, what is the macronutrient content, micronutrient content, et cetera. So that's kind of where my expertise comes in nutritional ecology. And then Mara, I'm really proud. She has really taken on and learned a whole new field, and through collaborators, looking at the gut microbiome. So we know aspects of a species' evolutionary history, how they're housed, their husbandry sort of routine, and also their diet really shapes the gut microbiome. So kind of the bugs living in their intestines. For these types of monkeys, that's actually really important. They're, in a lot of ways, if you can believe it, similar to cows. They have a ruminant-like digestive system. So the sort of symbiotic microbes that live in their gut really are important for helping them digest their diet and promoting their overall health. So we're one of the few zoos, that's us pictured here, very excited holding our DNA extracts. One of the few zoos that can actually process these fecal samples and extract microbial DNA. So we can do that all, you know, just down the hill. We rely on collaborators for some of the final steps of the analyses, but yeah, so this project is still ongoing, but we've already shared some sort of preliminary results with the American Society of Primatologists conference, and we're hoping to have a few publications for sure from this research. I think I should mention, so we're also working closely with the African Eurasian Monkey Tag, so that's kind of a group that oversees all four of these populations throughout AZA. Cool. So moving on to another project. Yeah, it was kind of challenging for Diana and I to highlight what three projects we want to talk about. I think you've probably heard a lot about our gorilla group and all the infants we have and some of those amazing stories. So you haven't had the opportunity to hear some of the science and research behind that. But at CMZ, we're really proud. I think we're the leader for sure in gorilla science, diet research, welfare research, behavior research here at CMZ. And that really starts with our Director of Conservation and Science, Dr. Kristen Lucas, who's the chair of the Gorilla SSP. Dr. Pam Dennis is one of the veterinary advisors for the Gorilla SSP. Caitlin Tennant here. Happy to say she's one of our most recent graduates through the program, joint program between Case Western Reserve University and CMZ. She's now a postdoctoral researcher with us. But this slide is really focusing on especially the research of Caitlin and Dr. Dennis and our gorilla team, really some groundbreaking research. So looking at this regurgitation and re-ingestion behavior, Caitlin and Dr. Dennis actually performed the first oral sugar tests with gorillas. So it's pretty amazing. And a lot of the credit also goes to our amazing animal care and keeper team to help train the gorillas for these voluntary tests. But yeah, so Caitlin has been able to assess salivary insulin levels and seeing whether or not those sort of co-vary with this regurgitation and re-ingestion behavior, which I don't know. I won't demonstrate it, but it's an abnormal behavior that is seen across zoo house gorillas. It's actually rare, and most of the gorillas we have here. And a large reason for that is some of the dietary research and changes that were implemented now 10 years ago, again, as part of our sort of long-term commitment to gorilla research and health and welfare. So then, kind of related to that, there's some of the more completed research, especially led by Dr. Dennis, is focused on heart disease in gorillas, which is common, especially in adult males. So Pam and her collaborators and our animal care team have been able to define normal echocardiographic parameters in gorilla, identify this link between adiposity or body fat accumulation and heart disease risk in gorillas, and then also examining potential links between gut microbiome and heart disease. So again, we have a really specialized team committed to all aspects of gorilla health, nutrition, and welfare. And I think this really ties in well to where we're going. We talked a little bit about primate forest, and I can only see this research continuing to expand as we move forward. So yeah, so again, we focused on three research projects. There were a number of other things we could have touched on, but rather than be here all morning talking about that, we also wanted to emphasize another big aspect of our science team's jobs, and that's teaching. So a number of us have affiliations with local and regional universities, primarily as adjunct assistant professors in the biology department at Case Western Reserve University, at Ohio State University, and also at Cleveland State University. So we typically teach animal behavior or animal behavior lab each spring semester through Case Western. Typically, Diana teaches the zoo science and management course through Cleveland State University in sort of as a June term course. And Dr. Pam Dennis teaches veterinary preventative medicine courses through her affiliation with Ohio State University. So yeah, each year we reach 60 to 100 students through our teaching of those courses.
And then just wrapping this up here, we wanted to talk about, which is my favorite part, really, I think, of sort of our day-to-day work, the one-on-one mentorship and training that we are able to do with students at multiple levels, starting at postdoctoral, like professional students, down all the way through high school. But we're now sort of trying to usher these students and provide like guidance and understanding for like the next generation of zoo scientists and professionals. So in the last 10 years, we've had, and more before that, but we've had three postdoctoral research fellows go through our program, six PhD level scientists through the joint program that Noah mentioned with Case Western Reserve University. We have served as their primary advisors, and they have graduated and gotten their PhDs, and now they all work out at different AZA zoo facilities in various different roles. Some of them are still here with us. And then we've also, we mentor capstone students through a program with Case Western Reserve University. In the last 5 years, we've had five students come through for various semesters with focused projects that we get to work with them on. And it's been a lot of fun watching them sort of like learn and grow and understand what it's like to do research at a zoo. And they often have presentations at the very end of these, at the end of these capstone projects for the university, that so we get to like see them share their work, and it's really rewarding. And then we have summer students that are veterinary students through Dr. Pam Dennis's relationship with OSU that come through. Noah and a number of our graduate students have the opportunity to go and train about 10 to 12 students a year in the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund Memoirs program, so they're training students there, basically generating their main science chops as they like sort of want to move into, some of them move into graduate programs, other ones come back and work for the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund. And then finally, just in the last several years, we've added a science component to our Zoo Crew Teens program. So the teens that come in that volunteer for the zoo, we now work with them and show them a little bit about what it's like to do a behavior data collection project at the zoo, and then we teach them how to do it, show them why we want to do it, and then allow them to collect data, and then at the end, show them what all their hard work has contributed to, what we've learned, and how we're applying it. So that's everything that we have for you to share with you today, just a little bit of a touch on all of this. So we'd be glad to take any questions you have about any of the specific things we mentioned.
I had a question, and it relates more to the monkey and the tree kangaroo diets. When animals are fed as a group, how can you individualize a study on diets? I mean, I would think the A monkey would be the one that would be the fattest. And not that it's that way here.
No, no, for sure.
I'll volunteer for this one. Yeah, that's a great question. And I would say welcome to the daily frustration that I have. So interesting for the tree kangaroo research, it kind of all depends on the species. So tree kangaroos are a species where they're housed solitarily. They're only together for breeding purposes. So actually for that study, it was very easy. We knew who was eating what because they sort of fed separately. For species like group living primates, it can be very challenging, especially if you have a species with strict dominance hierarchy. Yeah, what you're saying is exactly right. Sometimes the highest ranking sort of member in the hierarchy gets all the preferred foods, which can be the sugary sort of high calorie stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a balance. And I think our animal care team, that's really their specialty. They work sort of with the unique dynamics of their groups and their animals to make sure the best that they can, individuals are getting what they need. So sometimes that involves separating off, having multiple keepers sort of feed different individuals. Yeah, especially so those lower ranking individuals get what they need.
So it's sort of a socialism, you sort of instituting
I will say no comments.
That was very smart.
My question kind of related. I was thinking the same type of thing, but this is actually more of a controlled environment. So my question was more of the research that you do is primarily, it sounds as if it's primarily with the AZAs. Do you compare your research with other research with animals in their natural habitat, which would sort of, I think, mm-hmm. Because this is a more, I say, controlled environment where you could actually pull the emaciated one aside and feed them, whereas in so how's your research compared to the natural habitat research?
That's a great question. So for a number of species and much of the stuff that we talked about just now that wouldn't occur without, so a lot of the information that we need to learn like what they should be eating and how they need to be eating, it comes from animals in the wild. So in a lot of cases, this is where we're working, and for each of the programs that you saw here, we're working with on the AZA SAFE program. So this is sort of a connection. So SAFE stands for Saving Animals from Extinction. These programs are made up of different stakeholder members from AZA zoos. And at least for some of the programs, it serves as a tying factor between like the SSPs and the conservation that's going on for animals in the field. So there's a lot of trading of information, especially when it comes to research, because there's information that both people in the field can learn and then apply back to help them like find out. So for tree kangaroos, it's are they territorial? You know, what are their home range sizes look like? Where are they going to be found? It's things like, sometimes it's simple, like testing methodologies, like it's testing veterinary care or susceptibility to diseases, or can we put a radio collar on this animal and have it be, you know, like have it not interfere and be all right. So those things are often tested on animals in zoos and then applied back to field conservation programs. But then also the information that we use to try to understand how best to take care of them comes directly from, and the basis for at least the tree kangaroo diet research that we've been working on is absolutely because there was a pivotal project done by the SSP nutritionist for that species where they just watched the animals and saw what they ate and then collected it and then analyzed it so that we would know what sort of macronutrients are they getting, what could we emulate in zoos.
Thank you.
Thanks. Fantastic update.
Wow. Very interesting.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The next and last one is the award of the Rebuilding American Infrastructure with Sustainability and Equity, otherwise known as RAISE. RAISE runs from the U.S. Department of Transportation. Sean and Sarah are going to give us an update.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, Commissioners. Humbled to be before you this morning and talking about the largest federal grant that the organization has ever received. A tremendous amount of work has gone into this process. So I just want to give a little bit of background before I hand it to Sarah. In 2021, we applied for a RAISE planning grant that provided $1.5 million, which set up two projects ready for construction. So that's the Slavic Village Downtown Connector North and the Morgana Run Extension, and then provided for the planning and alignment studies for two other projects. That's the Opportunity Corridor Connector and the Euclid Creek Connector. So the two projects that were set up for construction, the thought was we would immediately and as soon as possible submit for funding to construct them. So it's a seamless process. So in February of this year, we came to you asking for the request to submit for that funding. And on June 24th, we got a phone call. Brian got a phone call from Senator Brown's office with the amazing news, which was great because they had started to provide some awards 2 days in advance and we did not see that we were yet listed. So the call to Brian came with great fanfare.
And just to interject, the team that applied actually got to hear it right from John Ryan and Senator Brown's office, and the effusive, I would say, how well they think of Cleveland Metro Parks and the work that we do and the ability to execute this and the impact on the community. I mean, it's not lost on us. This is the largest in our entire history. So it was probably one of the best moments in my career to hear the conversation coming from them and share it with staff.
So with that, Sarah, who has championed this effort and has received a lot of support from many departments and staff across the Metro Parks, is going to walk us through some of the details of the project.
All right. Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. As Sean mentioned, we did get the announcement towards the end of June that we were successful in our request. We did request $19.5 million at 100% federal funding because the program allowed for areas in persistent poverty to ask for that additional. Usually it's an 80-20 split. So we're very fortunate to be able to get this award and continue the momentum of these projects. As you know, the RAISE program has our planning grant included four different projects. These were the two that were going to full construction documents, going through the full design and engineering process. So with the award for construction, we will be able to construct 1.7 miles of the Slavic Village Downtown Connector. And for everyone here, it's this piece in blue. And for anyone that's listening on, it is the extents for that project are from East 14th Street and Orange Avenue, right by the post office in downtown, to Roosevelt Court and Broadway. And so that piece connects into a piece already constructed as one of the contract groups for the Interbelt project by ODOT. ODOT will continue to construct the central portion of the downtown connector as part of another project, an I-77 project. And then we are finishing up with feasibility study in partnership with the city of Cleveland for the southern piece of the Slavic Village Downtown Connector. So in total, we'll have 3.2 miles for Slavic Village Downtown Connector, and very similar to the towpath trail to provide benefits to those living on the east side of the river in the Slavic Village Union Miles neighborhood predominantly. Morgana Run Booth Avenue Extension, also in blue here, connects from the eastern end of the Morgana Run Trail that's already in existence in the city of Cleveland. That's a 2.1 mile trail. It'll connect into the Slavic Village Downtown Connector in that central portion that ODOT is going to be constructing. And then it takes you from the end here down through the neighborhood at East 91st Street and takes you back out to Broadway Avenue and hooks you into the Mill Creek Falls area of Garfield Park Reservation. You can see we're constructing a big loop here. We have a lot of infrastructure on the ground, trail infrastructure, and these are the really important gap-filling projects. And so we're gonna be able to have the same kind of level of facilities in this neighborhood now as a result of this award. So it is very exciting. It also highlights too, as I have mentioned, oops, uh-oh. Dave, can you help me? I hit the wrong button. Okay. we'll try to not be so clumsy, highlights the need then for one of those pieces for the opportunity corridor connector that is part of our RAISE project that we were just taking through feasibility, really shows how important that link is going to be to pursue as well. So plug for more to come. And just a little bit more detail on Slavic Village Downtown Connector, as I mentioned, East 14th Street in orange. There's some existing trail infrastructure. Oh, drats, I did it again. Trail infrastructure in place along Orange Carnegie. And then that's the East 9th extension right there. And so you go along Broadway Avenue. This is made possible mainly by a road diet. Broadway Avenue in this section is four lanes, four very wide lanes of traffic. For the most part, we are retaining one lane in each direction with a center turn lane. I mentioned before in previous presentations, GCRTA is part of our biweekly project team meetings, as our Slavic Village development and Union Miles development. So we have a lot of input coming in, and City of Cleveland, we're doing the project in partnership with City of Cleveland. We have a lot of input coming in for, you know, what's needed as part of GCRTA's upcoming TOD, transit-oriented development study along Broadway Avenue, and other things that are happening within the neighborhood. So we are tying this all in together as we're developing this project. And that's also relevant too for the Morgana Run Booth Avenue extension. Again, this is that eastern extent for the end of Morgana Run Trail that is maintained by the City of Cleveland. We do loop around, go through Booth Avenue, the underpass, rendering over here of just some early concepts of what that would look like, and then turning Booth Avenue into a greenway, removing the vehicular traffic on there, and then looping down on East 91st Street, Miles Park Avenue, connecting into the existing piece of trail along Broadway Avenue, and then going over the Warner Bridges into Mill Creek Falls. And ODOT is about complete with the feasibility study for looking at the circulation of the Miles Turney Broadway loop area and potential for streamlining some of the vehicular access through there. So we've been working with them as well to make sure that all of these projects are working in unison with each other. And this is just a rendering of what that greenway portion of Booth Avenue might look like. The trail will probably meander a little bit more, but that was something that we heard very clearly in feedback. While a lot of these are side paths or along rights of way, so there's not a whole lot of room to work with, there are some areas that we can make it a little bit more special, green it up, have a little bit more of that natural feel. And the opportunity corridor connector also allows for that as well. And that is it. In terms of timeline, we just had a new grantee webinar yesterday, and as has been our experience, it takes about a year to get under contract with Federal Highway Administration to access these funds. But also, as Sean said, we designed the application in the process of, we're going to finish our design June of next year. So hopefully that aligns that we'll be able to roll pretty much directly into construction for these projects. And so we'd be looking at two construction seasons to be able to get them done. But that's a pretty quick turnaround to go from design to on the ground and serving the public. So we're really excited about it.
They deserve a round of applause again.
Don't go away.
Can I ask one question?
So in the second—
We're so close.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't. You know me and crossing. So Broadway near Garfield Park, is that at grade or is that over or under?
It is at grade, and working with the City of Cleveland, we're going to be putting in a full intersection stoplight with pedestrian countdown timers there. There is not a traffic signal currently at that crossing at Miles Park, and so there will be as part of our design.
What would it take not to do it at grade as opposed to creating an intersection?
A whole lot more money, but it's also the space constraints of how you would land it down. To be able to ramp up and land it down,
that's the
issue. But having a full traffic signal will help tremendously.
No, I get it. I get it, but
yeah,
it's just my hang up.
Yeah.
Then the other question is on Broadway, the diet, is that all infrastructure? So spaghetti, drainage, all that stuff in that 1.7, 1.9 miles? That's a lot.
Oh, sure.
There is a reason that $19.5 million is affording about 3 miles. When you look at the last 8 miles of the towpath, at $52 million, you know, we can go anywhere from building a mile of trail now for about $1 million at the absolute cheapest in a greenfield, to this scenario where we are literally rebuilding infrastructure to modify it to now have these active transportation components. So the answer is yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, my question is how unique is this $19 million grant? I mean, did other cities get that money like that? I mean, it seems like, I'm not complaining about it, but it seems like we're getting a little, we're the big hog at the trough, it looks like.
Oh, no, we have sharp elbows, Commissioner.
Well,
Eight monkeys, right?
We have worked hard to position this project over years, and it builds on 20 plus years of work from the community and others to bring these projects forward. So it's all additive. But to answer your question, there are large awards. The maximum project award for the RAISE program was $25 million. There are some projects that receive that amount. And, you know, when it was said that we hadn't seen our name out there, there weren't any press releases, Toledo Metro Parks received $19.1 million. That was announced on the Friday beforehand. And I told Sean, on Monday morning, all right, I'm going to start working on ATIP application that we got approval for in June. But, being able to hear the announcement directly from Senator Brown's office was pretty amazing. So
nice.
Fantastic.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. As we close out this meeting, our next regularly scheduled meeting is August. You look to our mission and you look to protecting nature. So the presentation by Bethany Majewski, you look at inspiring or connecting communities. You look at the presentation by Sarah, and then inspiring conservation of the world. You look to the our two doctors from the zoo. We are living our mission, and we appreciate the support from our entire team, and we appreciate the support from the commissioners. We do have an executive session.
Kudos.
Is there an executive session? Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of acquisition or purchase of real property?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Oh, you got to do a roll call.
Dan Moore.
Yes.
Yvette Itu.
Yes.
Bruce Mc.
Yes.
Thank you.
Move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Good.